welcome to another episode of Bring Out Your Undead. I, Casey, have reanimated Megan and Mieka so we can haunt your speakers with our ghostly voices in this episode called Mostly Gory Ghostly Stories.
In this episode, we'll finally be dimming the lights, lighting a candle, and discussing probably the most famous kind of undead in this world, ghosts.
There are so many kinds of ghost stories, from tragic romances to evil haunted houses. What's your favorite kind of ghost story?
Like, I don't think I have a favorite kind. Mm-hmm. I just like ghost stories as a whole. But I'm also the kind of person, when it comes to like any of my horror enjoyments or like any kind of like that haunted aspect, is not seeing the ghost or not seeing the monster. So it's I'm the kind of person who's like, as soon as I see it, I'm no longer afraid for it. Mm-hmm. It's the mystery of what it looks like and what it sounds like and what it feels like, and just getting those small little tidbits and like hints of its existence that kind of get me and like make my skin crawl. Mm-hmm. Once I see the monster, I don't give a shit anymore. Yeah. I'm like, oh, there it is.
Yeah.
That's nice. Yeah.
It's like the, because you build it up in your mind, right?
Yeah.
And that's what makes it like potentially scary, but also intriguing. And it's like, I need to know more.
Yeah.
And then you build it up. But then when you see it, it's like, oh, okay.
Well, that's why I don't give a shit about what people say about Paranormal Activity. Like, fuck off. That shit was scary.
You never see it.
Yeah. You see the remnants of its existence, and you see clues that it's there, but you never actually see it. And that, to me, is what makes my skin crawl, because the fear of the unknown is a thing for me. It's why I don't like the dark.
Yep.
It's why I don't like, you know, being around places by myself.
Yep.
Like, it's the unknown is a scary place to be.
Nope. I'm right there with you. Like, things are happening around me, but I can't see what it is. Nope. Don't like it.
Yeah, give me a poltergeist dying fire.
Walking out.
Respectfully.
Lighting it on fire and walking out.
Yep. I'm leaving.
If I walked into my kitchen and my table, like my chairs were turned upside down, I'd be like, babe, we're out. Whatever's here, you can have it. Like, it's yours. Like, unless you're going to be my best friend and you're going to tell me that I'm pretty, I'm not doing it.
100%.
So in general, it's just until I see it, it's the most terrifying.
Exactly. 100%.
All right. Well, ghost stories actually, like, have a history. So a ghost story is any piece of fiction or drama that includes a ghost or simply implies that the possibility of ghosts exist or there is belief in them.
Mm.
So I feel like we all lie in the resonating with the second part of that. It's like, when it's potentially a thing that actually could happen or does exist is when it's, you know, that elevated emotion. It can also just simply refer to a scary story, a supernatural fiction, or a horror story. But aside from it being potentially scary, ghost stories can also serve as prophecies, lessons, morality tales, or even comedy and romances. Lots of really old theater had ghosts as part of the whole act.
Mm.
Consistently, ghosts are described and depicted as misty, transparent, incorporeal, and believed to look this way due to them coming out of a person as their spirit outside of their body. Interestingly, in the late 1920s, English ghost stories were studied and noted to always have five traits. The pretense of the truth, a pleasing terror. No, it's not. A pleasing terror. Because there's the idea of terror. I'm like, no, it's not a typo.
It's a pleasing terror.
Yes. Yeah. It gets you going. No gratuitous bloodshed or sex. No explanation of the machinery around how it exists. And it's a setting of those of the writer's and reader's own day. So it's like, I saw this in this manner and it exists down that road.
Okay.
So studied, data-driven. It's like, let's put some facts around ghost stories based on what I know.
Give me the facts.
Long before that, though, ghost stories have been told before they could become a piece of literature. They were just a story that you told at bedtime or to control what other people did to give them some morality or give them some terror around something that maybe they shouldn't do.
Tell your children not to walk in the forest at night, you know, like whole nine yards, yeah.
Absolutely. There is evidence of ghosts and ghost stories dating back to the 8th century, and even through carvings and art and images etched on ceramics, and that's how they tracked these stories. So whether you enjoy ghost stories or not, they can be found in nearly all cultures, geographies, and religions. And so, of course, it will be part of the D&D landscape. So let's just get going on what the story of ghosts is in 5th edition. And Miega, it's up to you.
All right. So I'm going to start in the Call of the Nether Deep book, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about the story of Celeste, Marissa, and Mary. And for those listening, you can find this on pages 149 and to 151. So in order to understand those three, we got to talk about Alexion. He was a young warrior who fought selflessly and asked like deities to help him protect like the innocent people like from the war that was going on. And so he became an Apothian, which is a warrior that's like infused with divine energy. And when I read that, I just felt like they dipped him in like a bowl of just energy. Like, there you go.
Created. Or they like shoved him in a cauldron.
Yeah.
It's like, here.
Yeah. Like, take all that power.
Get in that jar, Gregory.
Get in the jar, Gregory.
Get in the jar, Gregory.
There you go. And so, Celeste and Marissa, they were a couple, and they had a daughter whose name was Mary. And so, when Alexion was, like, traveling, he, like, stayed at their house, and, like, you know, they took care of him and all that. You know, he was the soldier who needs a place to stay, right, before he moves on to the next town or village or wherever he was going. And so, they opened their home to him, and everything was fine. So, when he left, those three were killed. Like,
Of course.
Like, a group kind of, like, rained down on the town and just, like, slaughtered everyone. And so, since he's been a little, like, fast forward, since he's been trapped in the Netherdeep for so long, his memories are jumbled. And this is where, like, as a DM, you can ask your players to, like, help him remember, like, what's going on. And so, you end up going to the house and you find, like, their corpses. And you gotta... And so, like, he's forgotten their names. And so your players are, like walking through the house, like, trying to figure out, like, who were these people so we can, like, help this guy out. The name of the game when you have your players doing this, when one of your players learn the name and speak to them, or and, like, speak it out loud, the ghost will, like, appear and attack. Like, they're pissed off. And so once they appear and you bring up Alexion's name, they'll kind of calm down a bit and, like, listen to what you have to say. So, like, if you are able to calm them down, they will remain calm and forgive Alexion for not being there to defend them, because that's why they're, like, pissed off.
Yeah.
And then they, like, move on towards the light. So, a little bit about them. Celeste enjoyed the hobby of incense making.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. And Marissa, she enjoyed baking. Oh. And Mary was training to be a soldier.
Okay. What a variety.
Yeah. So, this is kind of just, like, an overview of who they are, but, like, in the book, in Netherdeep, it's, like, a breakdown of, like, what your players can do and stuff, and it's very cool.
How to interact with them, how to have conversations with them, what would happen if something was said, like, that kind of stuff, too. Yeah. That's fair.
So, that's them.
Ooh, creepy.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Creepy. All right, moving straight into what is a ghost depicted in the Monster Manual. Really emphasizes what Miyaka just said about basically ghosts lingering in a certain area because they have unfinished business. So in that, they were super pissed off and they needed to talk to somebody.
Yeah. I just talk about my problems and then I'll go away.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm the kind of person that just needs to talk.
Yeah. And so, indeed, it's described as a soul of a once living creature bound to haunt a specific location, creature, or object that held significance in its life. Mm-hmm. This makes it incredibly versatile in your D&D campaigns. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely the haunting is due to unfinished business, trying to resolve something from when they were living. So that is usually the best way to get rid of the ghost, is to help them fulfill what keeps them there. But if you aren't exactly feeling empathetic to their cause when you come across one, they can also be destroyed by identifying a weakness tied to their former life. So I love the two examples that the book gives you. The first one is, you can use the same kind of torture that killed that person again, and that will destroy them.
Great.
How traumatic.
Right?
Like, just no rest whatsoever.
Uh-huh. But the next example is, well, the person used to be a gardener, and so if you expose them to the floral fragrance that they used to know, makes them now vulnerable to that in their ghostly form, and then they are destroyed. Like, how do we go to torture devices to floral fragrance vulnerabilities? I'm like, wow, Monster Manual, great.
Like, it's giving manipulative, kind of.
But I also immediately thought about that when they gave information on the traits of the human lives of Celeste, Marissa, and Mary. Because it's like, perhaps you, if you started an incense, that would like trigger her to cross over or something like that, you know? Anyway, so ghosts are all up in their emotions. If you move into the area they haunt, you usually have a sense of sadness, loneliness, yearning. You will likely feel cold, and there might be eerie silences or strange sounds, or maybe a stench. They may cause objects to move or corpses to rise from the ground, but despite them being the cause of all that in their environment, they actually have no control over any of it. Just because they are haunting that area, it can cause a whole like birth of stuff happening.
Yeah.
So I didn't really see much else in terms of novel lore outside of the Monster Manual. It kind of gives a well-rounded descriptor of that. So let's get into the actual stat block. As usual, the ghost and undead have undead nature, where they don't require air, food, drink, or sleep. And as a medium-sized undead, they can be any alignment. They have an AC of 11 and an average hit points of 45 and a speed of 0 feet, but a fly speed of 40 feet. So this will be an advantage over the average player character speed of 30. But the biggest advantage that ghosts have is that they are incorporeal. It gives them a hefty list of resistances and immunities, like everything. I'm going to fly through them just for the sake of anyone who actually wants to know. They are resistant to acid, fire, lightning, thunder, and bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing damage from non-magical attacks. They are immune to cold, necrotic, and poison, and immune to being charmed, exhausted, frightened, grappled, paralyzed, petrified, poisoned, prone, and restrained. So, like, use force damage. But they can also do force damage. So, but that is ultimately why it can they end up being at a CR4. So they know any languages they knew in life, and they can see into the ethereal plane while in the material plane. They can also move through other creatures and objects as if they are difficult terrain. Now, this will cause them 1d10 force damage if it ends its turn inside an object, but it gives them the ability to never be blocked in. They will just move through you or move through walls.
Yeah.
So when it also moves between the ethereal and material plane as an action, it cannot affect anyone or be affected while on the other plane. So this is also an escape route, which makes them very frustrating to fight. I think we have all fought them at one point. And
a ghost
it is,
of some kind?
Yeah. It is super frustrating. Yeah,
very frustrating.
They do have a melee weapon attack with Withering Touch that has a +5 to hit and deals 46 necrotic damage. But what makes them really interesting to fight is the two other abilities they have. So the first is Horrifying Visage, where any non-undead creature within 60 feet that can see it must make a DC 13 wisdom save or be frightened for 1 minute.
I wanted to say Visage.
Of course you did. There is always one. So the target can repeat the save at the end of each turn to end the effect, and then they are immune to it for 24 hours. But if a save fails by 5 or more, the target ages by 1d4 times 10 years. And this can only be reversed by the Greater Restoration spell, and only if it's done within 24 hours.
Oh my god!
You're on a time crunch to be ugly, so, be ugly or pretty.
Oh my god!
If your dice are on the DM side and not yours, you could age 40 years just by, failing the save. Mm-hmm. And, like, if you encounter this at a reasonably lower level or there's no big magic users, like, Greater Restoration spell is not something lots of times that's at hand.
Yeah, that's fair.
And you have a very tight window. So does aging really impact your, player character in terms of stats? Perhaps not, but it adds lots of flavor that suddenly, like, if everybody's 20 years old and suddenly you're 60 in the group.
Oh my god.
Yeah, maybe you would have a problem with that.
I would have a big problem with that.
Like, I'm sorry, I've spent a lot of time on this visage. I mean, you did not.
Like, literally wasted my time. Like, my whole life.
So that's the first one. And next is possession, which is probably self-explanatory. Mm. But with a recharge of 6, a ghost can choose a humanoid it can see within 5 feet and cause it to make a DC 13 charisma save or be possessed by the ghost. The ghost disappears and the target is incapacitated and loses control of its body. You can no longer target the ghost for attacks, spells, or other effects except if you're attempting to turn undead. So now there is a split between the ghost stat and the possessed person stat block, and that is outlined in the monster manual. Mm-hmm. The possession will last until the body drops to 0 HP, or the ghost ends it as a bonus action, or the ghost is turned or forced out with some sort of spell or ability, and at which point the ghost will appear within 5 feet, and the target is immune to possession for the next 24 hours. So it's like, you cannot do that again to me.
Fool me once in this 24 hours.
Yeah.
But soon you can fool me twice.
But tomorrow.
But tomorrow. You can fool me again.
So that is the ghost. CR4, it has some unique abilities, and you can maybe come up with these a little bit sooner in your campaign, depending on the size. But let's roll some dice and talk about using them.
Yeah. All
right.
All right. God, let's move closer. Sorry. Yeah. There we go. All
right, I got a 15.
All right. Was I red?
You were red.
Yeah. 8. Nieka's at a 4. All right, so Megan, let's think about role-playing and maybe let's do a quest or plot hook in dealing with a ghost or adding a ghost.
Well, I like the idea of, like, the possession portion of it. Because I've played a character in a D&D game where I got possessed for a day.
Yeah, you gotta try it, right?
You try everything twice, you know? To know if you really enjoy it or not. But no, I've played in a campaign where my character got possessed by a ghost and then did unspeakable things. And eventually the possession was ended by getting her leg shot off. And
yes, that was, I remember this.
It was a great time. But it's an easy way for DMs to kind of infiltrate a character to do things against their nature, which will cause a lot of good role-playing opportunities at the table after the fact, right? So if I'm going to implement a ghost, like, the possession is the first thing I'm going to go for.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to come across a ghost, you're going to be traversing in some kind of place where there's dark and sinister things happening, right? And a ghost will just naturally at some point in time appear. They just exist, right? So again, possession is the part that I would lean into, because that to me gives role-playing opportunities, and it gives it's more of an interaction that doesn't require combat right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? So if you want to have, like, one of those random encounters, someone gets possessed by a ghost, right?
Yeah.
You're in a haunted forest, someone gets possessed by a ghost, yeah. Right? So that's a great way to just implement something different to interact with. That's not necessarily the storyline proper, but bodes a little bit more opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you don't even have to know that anything is haunted to bring in a ghost. It's like, well, surprise!
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, I like the idea that it's causing a bunch of environmental conditions that, like, are out of its control.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I like the idea that maybe you're searching for it and you're getting these clues, and then you may come across you're looking for a specific headstone,
mm-hmm.
and a specific person that you need to get information from. And you've heard that they linger in the area as ghosts.
Yeah.
But as you're going through, you get more environmental indicators that you're going in the right direction. But then unintentionally, it starts, like, raising corpses, and you're now having to fight zombies and skeletons just to get to this person. Yep. And then, like, they're so guilty about it.
I'm so sorry.
They're like, I don't know how to stop it. I can't do anything about it. I'm just gonna go. And you're like, no, we need to talk to you. It's like, I'm running away.
Oh, my Atlanta.
And so I would maybe, you could use it as a comedic avenue as well for gaining information. And I think that would be really fun because it would start off being very ominous and you'd be like, oh my God, we're getting closer. There's now like no sound in this forest. Like we must be on the cusp. There's a mist. And then suddenly you're seeing a bunch of corpses being animated and it's like, what is happening? And then you meet them and they're like, I am so sorry.
I'm so sorry.
Yes.
It's like they do that every time. Yeah. What do you think, Mieka?
For number one, or?
Yeah, for quest, plot hook, and even adventures.
I had something in my head, but of course I forgot. Ooh, okay. So, I don't know. When I think of ghosts, I always think of haunted houses.
Of course,
and, you know, terrified of haunted houses. But, like, what if you put your... what if you put your players in this huge haunted house, and, like, at every floor, they just get older? Like, I hate that aspect of it. But, like, seeing it happen to other people would be, like, hilarious. And so, like, as they get, like, you know, when they go to each floor, they encounter, like, this, like, really, like, powerful ghosts. Like, they just age them. Like, how many years was it?
It was 1d4 plus 10 years on every fail. That's more than 5. So, like, if you litter this place with ghosts and they're all, like, the first thing the ghost does is look.
Yep.
Like, you're gonna have players rolling that all the time.
Oh my gosh.
You are cruel. Yeah. They finally get to, like, the attic where they need to go, and they're like, I can't walk my bones.
Like, I would definitely, like, I would definitely put something there to kind of, you know, like, rewind, you know, go back to normal. But, like, putting your players through that would be hilarious.
Yeah. And, like, it's the mental battle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Love it.
All right. So as part of an exploration with using ghosts, we talked about like environmental stuff that comes up, but how do we feel about utilizing like the horror, the dread, and body horror around these? Because they're incorporeal.
Yeah. But I think that as a DM, you can, because ghosts can be derived from any other type of creature, you can really play up the grotesqueness and the existential horror of any creature.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And bring that in. And it's just a ghost version of.
Yeah.
Right? So, and like, even if you're going to be like the ghost version of an ex-player character.
Yeah.
You definitely want to describe what the wound looked like that killed them. Right? Yeah. Like, did they burn in a fire? Are they covered in scars? Do they have like a slash across like their throat? Do they... You know, like, do they still have the weapon or the dagger sitting in their chest or in their back when they were betrayed? Like, those pieces, right? So, those are going to be things that you want to play on as a DM. And so, it comes back to whatever ghost is needs to have a reason for being there.
Mm-hmm.
You've already thought of the reason why the ghost is there. Now figure out how to visually impact your players so they can almost figure out why that ghost is there without having to have the conversation.
Yeah.
Like, if there's a dagger sticking out of their back, clearly they were, like, probably betrayed at some point. Mm-hmm. Or, again, if they were burned, maybe they were burned to death. If they have a slash across, like, through their stomach or were stabbed, like, clearly someone killed them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you could have those. And, like, I also love the idea of, like, the tongueless ghosts that can't speak.
Uh-huh.
So can't talk to you, can't tell you what happened, but then we'll have to, like, mimic and mime.
Yeah.
And I feel like that adds a fear factor to it as well, right? Like, they might not be immediately aggressive, but if you don't understand what they're saying, eventually they're gonna get frustrated.
Yeah.
Right? So that's what I would lean into as a DM, for sure.
Yeah I went to that too, like, depict they look like how they died. So, like, as horrific as you want to get at times, you can. I also do like the jump scare in horror shows where potentially the initial look of seeing ghost is scary because, they might be covered in gore or whatever. I immediately just think of The Sixth Sense. But then ultimately, they are seeking help. Like, they're seeking someone to rectify and, like, why they're actually there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that decision on make it something grotesque and see what the players do. Yeah. They might just immediately attack. maybe someone will try and talk to it and maybe understand, oh, like, they actually are going to have helpful information, or actually they can help us through this way because there's a shortcut through this mansion. There's a trap door or a secret entrance. But depending on how they react to the grotesqueness and the body horror that you put in, could determine how fast or slow they get through the thing.
The interaction, the whole interaction, right?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I'm thinking more so kind of playing off of what you were saying, Megan. Like, let's say you were dealing with a ghost that was burned alive. Maybe, like, your players could still see, like, the singes still, like, on them, or, like, the smoke still radiating off.
Yeah. Or maybe, like, there is a hint of smoke in the air, like burnt skin smell. You can the smell stench.
It. Yeah.
So, like, they're like, it feels like they're, well, they're actually in the room with you, because of course they're fighting you, but it's like you're actually there at the scene of, like, where they died.
I think it would be
crazy. Like, if they got stabbed in the eye, you can still see, like, that blood still, like, pooling down.
Yeah. It's almost like even the, not only the environment, but also their physical ghostly being is almost like a snapshot of what it was like when they were there. Right.
Right.
Like, if they were burned alive, maybe the room is still warm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter, like, how, it could have been 200 years ago. But for that ghost, it's as if it happened moments ago.
Yeah, that'd be good. Like, it's also a good role playing tip too. Like, because they're gonna keep thinking they're reliving this day in their life over and over again. Right.
Yeah.
And perhaps they don't know how to resolve the unfinished thing.
Yeah.
And so, like, you just see this ghost in horrific pain because they just got burned.
Yeah.
And, you know, some players might want to see if they can help. Some players won't give a shit.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah. Like, let's leave.
I like that a lot.
That's a Mieka message. Oh, I'm sorry.
It's like, do we need any more
advice? I have no interest in being here anymore.
It is always just a question. Just going to throw that out there to the group to see, like, what we're going to do.
All right, for combat, I don't think there's going to be a ton of, like, options. I think we all agree that we're going to likely lean into the horrifying visage and possession, because that's the big go-tos, and that's the ones that will pack the most punch.
Yeah.
But do you have any thoughts on strategies for hunting one, or even a potential idea on if it is destroyed?
Yeah, I love thinking about what it looks like when, like, these kinds of monsters
like,
die.
But when you die.
Especially with the undead, because a lot of them are quite unkillable, right?
Yeah.
So I would actually play on the fact that even if you did not know what this ghost story was, if you dealt the killing blow on a ghost, you all of a sudden get a visage of how it was that they died.
A visage.
I like how we're just ruining words for the internet. Like, you're welcome, everybody. We're from Canada, but we still sound weird. But I just like that idea that you now have the understanding of what happened to them.
Yeah, you get like a whole flashback
your
brain. Yeah.
And I think that bodes well for the DM, because then that whole backstory you wrote for that character, because your freaking murder hobo group decided to kill this ghost right away, you get an opportunity to share that piece of history with them, right? Yeah. Otherwise, they're never probably going to piece it together without you, like, holding their hand through reading books or doing investigation checks and what have you. It's a quick way to instill the story in that ghost's death and untimely demise. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any, like, the one thing about ghosts in terms of when you're trying to seek one out, the story is the same, where if you're trying to find a specific ghost to destroy, get information, or do whatever you're going to do, hey, perhaps you need to try and get the like, knife out of the ghost's back, because, like, you need to retrieve it for some other job.
Yeah. And it's just like,
some sort of crazy shit.
So, like, I don't actually want to kill you, I just kind of, like, need that.
Yeah. And then it's like, and they're, like, front facing to you, and you're like, shit, where am I gonna find? And then they just, like, turn around and start walking. It's like, oh, there it is.
Oh, shit. Yeah. How am I gonna get that now?
But you're going to have to do a little bit of work on, like, where they died. Yeah. If you can find out where they died or where things went horribly wrong for them, then that gives you the direction. But, like, so it's slightly more work than a random encounter. It's just like, okay, we need to find Joe. He was stabbed in the back by Kev. So Kevin now needs that back.
Fuck you, Kevin.
So let's go talk to the people in the tavern to figure out where they were.
Yeah, 100%.
Yep. Stuff like that. Yeah. So it adds a little bit more level before you're actually potentially going to end up in combat, because they may not want the knife pulled out of their back.
Maybe not. I was gonna say.
Mieka, what do you think?
I'm like stuck on the whole what happens when it dies. Mm-hmm. For me, I feel like I would make it when you deal that final blow, it's like they're not even a ghost anymore. They're like a real being in the room with you, and then like they die. And then like they just disappear.
Just adding the trauma in that last moment.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Love about that.
Mm-hmm. We love trauma, but not mine.
There you go.
Yeah,
and it's like a brief extra thing that you can do as the DM, like the visage.
The visage.
But it could add a bigger punch in why the hell your party was where they were and why they did what they did. Amazing. All right, so let's move on to other pieces of lore. Mieka.
All right, so I'm going to talk about now the story of Rose and Thorn. And spoiler alert, if you're about to play Curse of Strahd, I'm going to say some things. So,
spoiler alert. Yeah, is what she's trying to say.
Rose and Thorn. I actually played with these characters when I was playing Curse of Strahd. So a way you can enter Barovia or Strahd's domain is by being lured there by Rose and Thorn. And so these two are like two kids that were starved to death by their deeply disturbed parents who were cultists.
Great.
Yeah.
Good start.
And so like when you first meet them, they're all like, can you help us get rid of a monster in our house? And of course, you know, I said, no.
Absolutely not.
But then Adam was all like, me, you're gonna have to go in the house. I'm like, fine.
Small children, I'm not helping you. You're on your fucking own.
I was like, who are these kids? Like, where are your parents? So like
they starved them to death. That's what happened.
And so like you go into the house with them and then they disappear. And
of course.
Yeah. And like, so then you're like moving through Death House and you're trying to figure out where this monster is so you can like kill it so the kids will come back and like be happy. So spoiler alert, there was never a ghost in their house. It was just the screams of the cult's victims coming from the basement.
Of course.
Yep. And so when you get to the basement, you like figure this out and you're able to like put the bones or the skeletons of the kids' bodies to rest. And they kind of tell you a little bit about, you know, themselves. And it was kind of nice. I'm like, oh, I'm helping them. I'm helping them now.
It's very sad.
Yeah. But they're really cute. So you can, you know, see pictures of them actually in the Curse of Strahd book. And yeah, that's their little story.
Yeah. I remember playing, I did Curse of Strahd a few times. And I remember one of the most memorable ones is having Rose and Thorn. And then it was actually Roman's character when we were playing this campaign that like basically became a parent to them and like taught them how to fight. And then our DM at the time is super, he's so phenomenal. He's just like rule of cool. He'll let you do whatever the hell you want within reason. So Roman's character actually like trained them up and taught them how to fight to the point where they got skills and spells. And they helped us while we were like going through like the whole campaign. And it was very sad when they passed and were actually killed in ghost form at one point. And like, it was,
oh my God.
Because we brought them into battle with us. Right. So they ended up helping us in the end. Like, I think at the end, Rose ended up being the person who delivered a note to someone who came and saved us at the last second, like all this kind of stuff. So we use them quite a bit in Curse of Strahd, which I think they do get overlooked.
Yeah.
Because there's like such a small aspect, such a large campaign. But yeah.
Yeah. Like at the end of Death House, I was like, so wait, so they're like gone now? And Adam was like, yeah, they're gone. You helped them. And I'm like, oh, I kind of miss them, like just popping up anywhere. Yeah. And just being like, are you gonna get the monster?
Yeah. And like, no.
Yeah, it's like right before you like liberate them so that they can cross over. It's like, well, wait, can I just let's just wait on that?
Yeah,
I'll bury your bones another day. I promise. On my third wish, I'll wish you free. But I just want you as a friend for now. Thank you.
Yeah, selfish reasons.
For reasons.
Okay, so let's shift gears a little bit and talk about a cloud giant ghost.
We love giants in this household.
I know! Crossover!
Oh, yes! Where's the wine?
Shit.
We have Malibu Rum! It's a there different podcast.
Right. So, Candlekeep Mysteries It includes a ghost as part of the level 10 adventure. Mild spoiler, but I won't say any more than that. But it includes cloud giant ghosts that haunt a cloud giant keep. Shocking.
Fair enough.
So, visually, it looks a lot like your usual cloud giant with the gray-purple skin and the white-grayish hair, and they are huge size, except the face is like a skeleton skull. So just, you know, remove that, put a scary skeleton skull, and you're good. That's the imagery.
Delightful.
So again, you'll encounter these in the environment in which they likely died or have unresolved business, hence why they were killed in their keep, and they are now haunting that space. Mm-hmm. When comparing the stat block to a living cloud giant, they are both a CR of 9, but have a few noticeable differences. But this is a higher level, like, encounter. Mm-hmm. On average, as an undead, they have only half the hit point average to the regular cloud giant, and 1 point higher AC, which ends up at 15 versus 14. Instead of a walking speed, they have a fly speed, because they float. Of course. They're ghosts.
You have to have the hand wave of they float.
Yeah, this means float. but it is the same 40 feet for both. So instead of walking 40 feet, they fly 40 feet for a speed.
Yeah.
And the stat blocks are nearly identical, except the ghost now has a constitution stat of +0, while the real cloud giant has a con stat of +6. Mm-hmm. So this means it is not skilled in constitution as a ghost, and it is also not skilled in insight anymore either.
Yeah.
It gains your ghost damage resistances, immunities, and condition immunities, just like the classic stat block. I am not going to repeat it.
Yeah. We've heard it over and over again.
And they also have dark vision of 120 feet, whereas a regular cloud giant does not have that.
Yeah.
It gains many other ghostly traits, including ethereal sight and incorporeal movement that we've mentioned already. Mm-hmm. And it also gains regeneration. So it can regain 10 hit points at the start of its turn, unless it takes radiant damage or damage from a magical weapon. A cloud giant ghost dies if at the start of its turn it has 0 hit points and cannot regenerate. A little bit harder to kill than your classic ghosts. Getting into actions, the ghost can still make 2 attacks like a non-dead cloud giant, but has more options as actions.
Like how it's non-dead and undead instead of like alive and undead.
Yeah. I'm like, how many ways can I like sub from the like saying regular cloud giant? I'm like, the non-undead.
The non-undead. Like, the opposite of the undead cloud giant.
The other one. Nonetheless, so it has a spectral weapon attack, which has a hefty +12 to hit and 10-foot reach, and does 3d8 +8 force damage. It can move between ethereal and material planes like any ghost can as an action, and it can cast spells. So a regular cloud giant has the innate spellcasting ability, so this is retained and added as just an action for the ghost. The ghost uses charisma and requires no spell components, and the options are fog cloud at will, telekinesis 3 times per day, and control weather 1 time a day. This is much, much more limited than the list compared to the living cloud giant. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, it's retained some spellcasting abilities. And finally, the cloud giant ghost can use its action to wind howl. With a recharge of 6, it emits a dreadful howl that creates a dreadfully cold wind that can engulf up to 3 creatures of the ghost's choice.
3?
Yeah, and it's within 60 feet of it.
Wow.
Each target is pulled 20 feet towards the ghost and must make a DC 15 con save or take 3d10 cold damage on a fail, half on a success. So this is rounding up the targets.
You know what? Like, anyone who knows me in real life knows that I have a deep hatred for the wind. I hate the wind. I hate it when it's windy.
It just ruins everything.
Wind is dumb. It ruins everything. If you want any element to be worse than it actually is, add air to it and tell me. Prove me wrong. Wind. Like, anyways.
Fair.
This just, right. The fact that it not only, like, it pulls you in is, like, the mm-hmm. frightening aspect to it, right? Yeah. It's not meant to, like, it's meant to pull you in so it can kill you.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. not a defensive, like, creature in any way, shape, or form. It's no.
Yeah.
Come closer so I can
exactly.
feast on your flesh.
Like, yeah. It wants to get you into, it wants to control the weather and get you within that 10-foot spectral weapon attack and fuck you up.
I love that you said it just wants to control the weather, because now I'm thinking, like, role-playing aspects. I'd be like, I just really like it when it's windy. And, like, that's all it does in life, is just like, I just love the wind. It just feels great.
Don't we need a breeze right
Don't
now?
Don't you love the breeze when you feel it between your bones? Like, it just, it's just phenomenal.
Yeah, so ultimately, I feel like you can definitely use this as a guide to make any of the giant types a ghost giant. It's because you can use it as reference for how they added some of the ghost stat block to the cloud giant stat block. And I kind of like it because, well, I love giants. You love giants.
We love giants.
Mieka, by default, you love giants.
Yeah. If you don't, get out.
Yeah. So why not have any giant potentially be a ghost giant? As well. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's roll and talk about it more.
Okay.
I'm going red again.
All right. I got a 10.
Ooh. I got a 9.
All right, Mieka, you're first.
Mieka, 18. Okay, so we're going to kick off with role playing. Let's see, Mieka, out of these kind of four angles for role playing, what's the one that sparks you that you want to talk about? I'll leave it up to you.
You know what? I do like the spicy attitude type of cloud giant ghost. Just like, because I guess you would expect, if you were to see something that big, you would expect for it to just be like a brute, basically, like to, you know, kill your player. But if you get one that's just, like, a little sassy, you know?
Yeah.
I think that would be actually very funny. Like, let's bring some humor into trying to stay alive.
Yep. And you're definitely not expecting the ghost version. So, right. Like, you might even hear them or hear the howl and you're not thinking ghost. And then it's like, oh.
It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. No, I agree. Like, looking at the fact they have intelligence of +1 and a wisdom of +3, they're going to be able to communicate with you.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I feel like they're going to be, like, their attacks and their abilities do scream to me aggressor, when cloud giants inherently are not necessarily, unless threatened. Whereas I think this one, because it's undead, the ghost version of, it's almost like it's flipped its mentality.
Yeah.
Where it's like,
it
I spent
no
a lifetime.
Left to
yeah. Give. I spent a lifetime with Grace. I spent a lifetime sitting here talking to you, listening to your bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, I have no time for your nonsense. Get out of my fucking lair. I have no time for you. Right. And that's kind of how I would want to role play it, is the opposite of how it was when it existed, because it's just too old and too tired. Like,
yep. 100%.
Yeah.
Yep, that's amazing. And especially when, like, this is something, especially because it's the cloud giant, it has a realm, it has, like, magnificent keeps.
Mm-hmm.
So, sure, if you want to add in cloud giants to your campaign, this is an easy way to do it if you go there. And, like, surprise, it's a ghost cloud giant.
Yeah.
But it's going to be surrounded by the things it knows. And then, yes, it's going to be probably really pissed off and resentful that it's now going to stay there forever, but not be able to be who it used to be.
Yeah. I have no patience for your shit.
Yeah. So it's going to, if you're gonna try and like surround it or anything, it's just gonna have none of it. It's gonna throw out its dreadful, like, the wind howl and round y'all up and be like, "Hey, just stop. Just stop. Yeah.
Come in close, children. Hear my tale. Fuck off."
Yeah, it is not. Yeah, it's not going to be like, you can role play it as that, like, perhaps calm, collected, in that it's just indifferent.
Yeah,
on a lot of it. That's very fun.
Yeah, agree.
All right, so exploration. Let's talk about how, like, powers, spells, and attacks might look coming from an undead cloud giant.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Mieka?
I go first.
Yeah, you rolled high this time.
Let's see how it would look. I don't know, that wind spell, like, really, like, took me for a loop. I feel like it would just be very loud for no reason, like, overly loud. To the
constantly
point.
In a wind tunnel?
Yeah.
So you're constantly having to yell at each other and, like, make saves to see if you can actually hear what each other are saying?
Yeah.
And yeah. what if you, this is not part of it, but what if you made it last, like, two rounds or something?
Oh my gosh, so that yeah.
every, or at least one round, mm-hmm. so everybody's trying to do what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Your somatic spell, like, your speaking, like, yeah. spell components might not work, or mm-hmm. you might have to make a save to see if, like, the world can hear you say it.
Totally.
Yeah, definitely.
I like that a lot. I do also like the wind aspect of them. One, they're cloud giants, wind, clouds, all that kind of goes together. But mm-hmm. I want to tie that into its telekinesis. And the fact that, yeah. like, not only does, like, not, it doesn't just move an item for like, the shits and giggles of it. I feel like it uses wind to do that. Mm-hmm. To a degree, yeah. right? So you're going to feel a gust of wind pass through you and your sword's going to be lifted from your belt. Or what Ooh, have you. Fine. Right? So I think that would be, like, everything around it's going to be cloud, fog, and, like, you're going to be able to see the wind moving within the fog that it creates, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think, I feel like if I was to be one of these as a DM, I would use my, like, fog cloud to make it super foggy in the room. Mm-hmm. And then I would start using the wind to confuse people and, like, push them in different directions.
Yeah.
But the movement of the actual fog kind of gives my players that, like, visage of, like, what direction the wind is going. If I walk in this direction, it might be difficult terrain, but I'm going to walk with the wind, so maybe I'll go twice as fast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would just really, really play up the fact that this thing has wind capabilities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of like the idea of gaining some insight before you're going into their kind of like their keep or their yeah. area. And somebody tells you if the fog rolls in, run.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're traversing through, you're getting into the keep, you get past the main gates, you're going into the main like entryway.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, huh, it doesn't seem so bad. Like yeah. mm-hmm. we haven't encountered anything crazy. And then like fog rolls down, you know, the huge, I just imagine like the huge staircase yeah. that comes down yeah. and you see like the fog trickling down the staircase and starting to envelop the main floor and you're just like, oh Ooh, shit.
It's about to go down.
It's happening, people. This is not a drill.
Yeah, and then suddenly, just like in horror movies, the fog settles in and then you just see like the glimmer of somebody just going because they're being pulled by the wind howl and mm-hmm. so they're just being sucked like into some other area, but you can't even see where they're going.
Yeah.
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 Oh, that's perfect. That's perfect.
Love it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Combat ideas. we like what happens when it dies. Let's talk about that. What do we think?
You're first, Mika.
Oh.
What happens like when this cloud of fluff dies?
When it dies, I know this isn't, like, super creative, but it's just, like, this, like, a puff of wind.
Just like a child's,
like, a
boom! Yeah! But we're, like, a lot more force behind it, right? Yeah. Like, you've got to, like, roll something. Like, once it dies, like, all that wind goes out, your players have to roll something.
A in deck order save to, yeah, or deck something, save. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's got to be pushed back by a gust of wind or something like
yeah.
that, right?
Yeah, that makes total sense.
That does
yeah.
make total sense. I like the fact that it just gets extinguished, and then, like, mm-hmm. its bones just collapse to the ground.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah. yeah. And then it's just a heap of pile of bones, and then, like, just a little puff of fog just remains around the bones for a certain period of time.
Like,
yeah.
I know it's undead, but, like, I don't visualize it being, like, this is kind of going back into body horror. I don't see any horror behind it. I still see it as, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, because when you think of cloud giants as regal, right? That's kind mm-hmm. of like, whenever I see cloud giants in my head, I visualize them as being regal.
So this is what it looks like. Yeah. Okay. It's still wearing like the clothing
long
that
flowy
a
robes.
Cloud giant would, but then it's that face.
It's like, got a skeletal face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
yeah. With the Hades hair, the Hades flame yeah. hair, but made of wind.
Totally. Yeah. It's constantly being pushed upwards.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, its robes are constantly like floating.
Yeah.
Regal strong gentleman.
Regal strong gentleman. It's giving Hades.
Absolutely.
Love that.
Yeah.
I kind of like the idea of maybe it doing its own wind howl on itself when it dies, where, like, it kind of sucks into itself
yeah.
and like, just goes, like, up the stairwell. Or
into the ether.
Or into mm-hmm. the cracks of the floor and just, like, the howl kind of dissipates.
Goodbye, Santa Claus.
And then it's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Add that little creepiness.
That's a good idea.
I like that.
So much inspiration. Mm-hmm. All right, moving on. We've got some more lore for you.
All right. So now I'm going to tell you the story of, I believe it's pronounced Egeron's Ghost. And you can find this in the Storm King's Thunder book on pages 128 to 129. So once upon a time, there was a father and son duo. And their names were, the son's name was Egeron, and his father's name was, I'm going to say it was Blagiscus. Blag, we're gonna call him Blag.
All right,
dear.
That's what we're gonna call him. And so they were exploring and they were seeking the Eye of Anam to seek wisdom.
Yeah.
And this trip was not what they expected, because when they showed up at the Oracle, they went on to talk about, you know, what are we gonna get, what kind of opportunities, so on and so forth. Well, the Oracle told them that there was gonna be a huge power shift between the giants, and that they would have an opportunity to win the respect of their gods and bring honor and glory. But then the Oracle turns to Black, the father, and says, "You are not worthy, and you will never impress the gods, but your son, he will." Mm-hmm. The next thing you know, this guy turns on his son, and they're fighting. And, like, he kills him. Like, he kills his son. Like, he's that jealous. And then has the nerve, once his son dies, he's, like, sad about it. And it's like, well, you killed him. And so, like, the dad, he goes on about his business. And, you know, of course, the poor son is dead. But he manifests his spirit as, like, a cloud giant. And so, bringing your players into this, when you get to the spot where he has, like, died, your players can either fight him, or you can help him by going to slay his father. And this guy is, like, depressed. He's mourning. So, like, when you get there, he's just a sad guy. And it's like,
he's sad, sad.
It's like, I'm actually here to kill you.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's the story.
Well, and living cloud giants, their alignment is typically specified as 50% good or 50% evil.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then for the stat block for the ghost cloud giant, they actually don't even mention alignment.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I feel like that means it probably tracks with how they were in life. Mm-hmm. But yeah, depending on the tragic story, they might change a little bit. But mm-hmm. here, it seems like perhaps he remained relatively good, because he'll help the players.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if they are going to help him with murdering his dad.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's gray area.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, tragic. Well, I think we have one last monster, Megan.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Shem Shimei. So this little horror story and quest can be found in the Candlekeep Mysteries. It is a neat little story of a bard who was very obsessed with a story of Shem Shimei from like a little town, and then decided to write a story about this ghost and monster that used to haunt this town, put it in a book, and then by writing it in this book, he now kind of became a conduit that this book can now rise and summon this monster again. Mm. So this book is now like a gateway for it to come back and forth. And then this book was put in and kept within the cellars of Candlekeep, basically. So basically the curse that resides within the cellar of Candlekeep due to this book is a song that is constantly being played. So those who are infected with the sing song or lullaby kind of thing, I kind of imagine it being the song that never ends.
Yeah. it's never something nice.
Yeah.
That you want that is okay to hear over and over.
And you never know the full version of the song. So that's a really good kind of role-playing aspect to it, and the fact that like the song is playing in the background, but like you don't know the whole song. So you're trying to remember the lyrics to a song or remember the name of a song, but you only know like the part of it. Mm-hmm. You're like, what is that song? Like what song? I don't know what that is. Like it's the same. Yeah. It's kind of like that's how it starts.
Uh-huh.
And then it slowly drives everybody a little bit mad. So the goal here is to actually repair the book, is kind of what the storyline reveals you to start trying to do. And then eventually when you have the book together, it summons Shem Shimei, obviously. And then you end up having to fight this demon that is now being conjured, all because some stupid bard decided to write a story about
it. Oh my god. Of course, bards.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, right? So as a whole, Shem Shimei is a medium undead creature, literally a shadow of a being. So if you look at the art in the book, it is a humanoid looking shadow with glowing red eyes. So it's almost like a smoky black shadow that exists. They float above the ground, similar to some of these other ghostly undead, with a fly hover speed of 40. So basically a medium-sized wispy shadow that hovers around. So yeah, it's just a dark shadow.
It is legit.
It's just the thing that void. It's a thing that you think you see in the corner of your eye when you turn the lights off for the first time.
Yeah.
It's just humanoid shape, but a void of blackness.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. It's like darker than the shadows that are in your house is how I kind of imagine it being.
With red eyes.
Yes, with red eyes.
I love that.
That are super creepy.
Okay.
Its top stats are Dex, Intelligence, and Charisma at +3. Then its Wisdom is at +2, and followed by a Strength at -2, and then a Con of 0. Since it's a ghost, they of course have incorporeal movement, which is a classic, and are resistant and immune to the same kind of nonsense that most ghosts are. So for attacks, this thing has Maddening Touch, which is a melee spell attack that deals psychic damage, as well as something called Whispers of Violence, where the Shimshime chooses two creatures within 60 feet and must succeed on a DC 13 wisdom save or take psychic damage, as well as they are then required to use their reaction to melee attack someone of Shimshime's choice. So now it's making you fight each other.
Yeah. Bring on the violence.
But that's the thing. And it's not just one. It can say you and you attack each other and then you both get hit. Or it says you and you attack your healers and your friends. So it's attacking not only, it can attack up to four people per turn because it's attacking you as two players and then you two are now attacking somebody else.
Yeah.
So it does add a little bit of that fierceness of player on player attack, like by PvP, but like it's a possession piece to it, so it's not necessarily their fault.
Yeah.
Right. They also have something called Howling Babble, which is recharged on a 6, which is a DC 13 save for one creature of its choice within 30 feet, or take 46 psychic damage and be stunned. Anyone who's played with a monk in their party knows that stun sucks for the DM, so obviously this is going to suck for you as players. But the real kicker here is that there's something called a crushing end, which is actually how you kill this. So spoiler alert for anyone who wants to play this, is because in the original like story that was written by this bard, basically it was this story of this evil spirit that was then killed by the daughter of this family that it was haunting by crushing it with a Shantae blessed like millstone. So it was crushed to death. And that's how this thing died. And so now in its existence here, anytime it's rebrought through this book, the only way you can kill it is by crushing it with more than 1,000 pounds of weight. So even if it drops to 0 hit points, it will only drop to 1 unless it is being crushed by more than 1,000 pounds of weight.
Jeez.
Which spoilers again for Candlekeep, the interaction does happen within this cellar where there are many heavy objects. And the whole point of this battle is to use the book to lure it, because it wants its book back, is to lure it towards something.
And then shove
a stone over something on top of it so that it gets crushed.
Oh my god.
So.
Seems easy.
It seems easy, again, until it starts using its abilities to make you guys attack each other, like, be super confused, like, all those things, right? And it's only a CR4, I think. I didn't actually write it down, but yeah, CR4. So it's when you see CR4, you're thinking, like, a medium tier, like group, but because of the mechanic on how to kill it, it would seem impossible, right?
Yeah. Let's roll. I have thoughts.
I have some feelings, Casey says. Go ahead.
Did I go?
You did not even get in the box,
there. Try again.
I appreciate you. All
Where
right.
are we at?
Casey, you're at 19. Okay. I have a 14. And Miyako, you're coming in last with a 9.
All right.
So kicking off role-playing and quests advent, I'm going to go with like... how am I gonna do this? Let's talk about potential uses and how we might find this in a quest or integrate this into an adventure.
Yeah.
I have so many thoughts about the death part. We'll get there. I think you could swap out the specificities on that book and how it came about to be another type of book, even like from a family's story. And maybe it was the great-great-great-grandfather that was the bard and did this whole thing. And, you know, then 2 generations later, after all of the kerfuckus that went on, they packed this book away in like the family cellar.
Yeah.
It's like, no one should touch this. We're going
going to bury it deep in the cellar and make it nondescript to find it. But then, you know, 3 or 4 generations later, of course, they're doing some renos. And you suddenly get the excavator out and you suddenly pull out this thing and you uncover it and it's this book. And of course you read it and you figure it out.
Yeah.
So I feel like you could kind of plunk this whole thing in and it could easily be a one shot or something like that because it's like, aha, you uncover the book and this is the shit that happens.
Yeah. Because you're going to have some stupid historian, like, gnome that wants to read and, like, learn everything.
Why do I automatically think of Dan?
I automatically thought of Dan, so you automatically thought of Dan.
I automatically thought of Dave because he is always picking something up.
Yes, and he doesn't think.
But
about
he doesn't
it.
Read yeah. it. He just picks it up. Though.
Yeah,
he'd be like, "What a nice book," and it'll go away forever. And then Adam and Dave will be like, ah! "Oh,
yeah, that is
that'll
true,
never
too.
Come
that
up
is really true. On brand."
And then, like, way later, when he's TPK'd and his character dies, Dan's character loots his body and finds, like, when did he get this book? Let's read it.
And that's when it pops off. And I was like, today's the day.
Yeah. It's been 84 years.
Oh, Lord. Oh, God. Yeah, I the book is the easiest way to implant this story anywhere, right? Because the book doesn't have to be in Candlekeep.
Yeah.
The book could be anywhere. Like, so it could be the same, like, basic storyline, but, like, let's say you guys finish Candlekeep and you're now traversing around the world with this book for no reason, because it does say in Candlekeep that destroying the book doesn't destroy the monster in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And I also feel like if you, as a player, knows the storyline and knows the song, I feel like the song alone can be something that can summon it. So it could be like in your history you have a lullaby, like one of your players knows a lullaby from their grandparents or something like that that they hum all the time, but they've forgotten the last verse, so it never actually fully summons Shemshemeh.
It's just
a constant, like, almost happens but doesn't because they don't know the whole song.
Yeah. And the history on that grandfather, whoever it was that did that, also went mad and tried to bring their house down. Mm-hmm. And it was their effort of trying to, like, collapse the house on top of this book to destroy the creature.
Yeah.
Boom.
Done. Nailed it.
But someone stopped them and threw them in a psychiatric ward and forgot about them. And Casey, here we are.
No notes. Phenomenal.
Mieko, what do you think?
My mind goes towards the NPC who everyone loves but is actually evil, and they have, like, the book, and then they, like, wait for the perfect moment to, like, open it.
Of course, yes.
And then, like, all hell breaks loose, and then, like, that NPC just skips off, and, like, and now that NPC is, like, the villain of your campaign.
Yeah, like, that was their escape plan, was when shit was going down, they just, like, unleash this and then peace out.
Yeah.
And then, like, they have to figure out how to kill it, which you will not think of that way to kill it for a very long time.
Yeah, like, because that's the thing. Within Candlekeep, you get clues along the way of this thing's history and XYZ. Yeah. So you will eventually put it together before you fight this, that might be how you're supposed to kill it. But if this is out in the wild...
Yeah, you could totally
You won't
fuck
really
around.
Have access to that information unless the person who idiotically read the book read the whole damn thing.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, they would. Like, if you're the DM, you would be like, okay, this is the story that you read, and she was crushed by blah, 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 and that's how they died. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. So your characters might put 2 and 2 together, but it might take a couple of rolls and skill checks. To do that.
Yeah.
But.
Or, yeah, some, like, some history checks on ghosts, because ghosts, as we know from the very beginning, can only be destroyed by, like, redoing the way that they died or something else.
Yeah.
So that's why.
Exactly.
All right. For exploration, how do we feel about that? We've talked a lot about where we're encountering this. What about their powers or even body horror? We're talking about this thing. It's, I think, more not the physical horror, it's the lack of anything that is the scary part.
That it's just a shadow. So, like, you wouldn't even think that crushing it would kill it.
Yeah, at because, first like, is there something tangible to crush?
Yeah, like, absolutely. But I do feel like once this thing is summoned, if it doesn't want to fight you right away, it is going to be the thing that you see in the shadows, like, when you just kind of, like, glance across. It's like, okay, we'll make it into, like, a quick perception check. What's your passive perception? You're constantly feel like you're seeing something in the shadows. Or you're constantly feeling like you're being watched.
Yeah.
Right?
That is scarier.
Yeah.
Absolutely scarier.
Again, again, it's the unknown until you see it. Mm-hmm. This one can really do, because you can have it singing the song for an audio exploration clue. You can, again, have the walls lined with the same book over and over again, but they're all blank except for the one.
Oh.
Right? And that would be a good, like a little bit of an addition to make it more difficult if you're outside of, like, Candlekeep itself. So, yeah. But the existential horror of this thing is the fact that you can't see it. Yeah. And, like, so that's why I really love this one, is because it fits, again, into my aesthetic of what makes things scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, great horror shows or thrillers are when, like, you don't see the, like, big bad evil guy till, you know, an hour in or an hour and a half into the show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
What was it called again, Megan, where, like, it turns your players against each other and they start fighting?
That is the ability.
I think it's the
Whispers of Violence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so, like, what if you don't even see this thing or notice it, and then, like, your players just start fighting each other?
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. Like,
oh yeah.
It's like a lot you can do with that. Like you don't know you're being attacked, but you are. You can kind of play that for a while, I feel like.
And you could play it, like, under the same kind of traits as possession, but you could just play it as suddenly, like, the player stops talking and stops, like, engaging in anything. You can't even really, like, interact with them, but they just start fighting the other player.
Like, just start fighting other people, yeah.
Yeah, that is creepy. And how long till you figure out what the hell is causing that, you know?
Yep.
All right, finally, combat. What happens when it dies? I mean, you can talk about any type of combat you want, but that's the most interesting one. So when it dies, of course, okay, something large topples over, or it is crushed in the bottom of a house that collapses or something like that, or it's in the depths of a cave and it's been, like, hidden there, and then somebody blows up the cave till just like fully collapse it, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But what does it actually do?
I feel like well, because it gets crushed to death. It has to be crushed to death. Mm-hmm. So I can imagine that, like, it, like, its shadow almost, like, dissipates into the floor, like almost like a puddle or a pool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
Because, like, at first I would say that its eyes would go out, like, the redness of the eyes would disappear. But then, it's like a shadow, right? So I just feel like it would just, like...
And you might not see, like, the body parts of it because it's being crushed by something, right?
Yeah.
So if you couldn't see it, I like the idea of that's when you finally learn the last part of the lullaby, is it dies, and then on the air, it's the whiffs of the last of the lullaby that you didn't know.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm thinking of, like, a prize. Like, the eyes turn into, like, something.
You're looting. You're going to check out the loot.
Yeah, like, they're like gems or something.
Yeah, they're like rubies or something. Yeah.
Yep. I hate it.
Yeah, it is one of the aspects besides, I guess, the guy that got stabbed in the back that you could maybe loot, or if you want to
give me that dagger,
steal the dagger. But there isn't, ghosts don't really bode having a lot of loot because they're misty.
They're very misty.
So I kind of like adding that in for this one.
That's very cute.
It's a good one.
I like it.
So one last piece of lore for this episode as well, Mieka.
All right, I'm going to talk about the story of Ladara. And you can find her story in Dragonlance, Shadow of the Dragon Queen. So, Ladara was an elven priest, and she died during the Cataclysm. Do you all know the story of Lord Soth?
Yes, we've talked about the Soth.
Yeah, okay.
Soth is very popular in this
Adam
household.
Adam told me to ask you that question. Yeah. So, there we go. So, she was a close friend of Isolde. And so, if you don't know the story, Lord Soth fell for Isolde, and, I believe it was right before his wife died. Then, like, right after his wife died, he married Isolde and, like, took her away and stuff. So, Ladara was pissed off about that. And, when Lord Soth had his duty to stop the, cataclysm, Ladara showed up and was all like, hey, Isolde was unfaithful. You should, like, turn around and, like, go back and handle that. And so he did, which brought on the cataclysm, and you know, everyone like died.
Fucking Soth.
Yeah,
I remember being angry about his antics, but yeah. Ladara, vicious.
Yeah, and her, and so like she is a spirit that haunts this man to make sure he never finds peace because of what he did and, like, taking a soul away from her friends and all that. So, yeah.
Preach. Preach, sister.
I love her.
Literally die and be undead on that hill.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the undead hill I'm going to remain.
Don't destroy me. I love what I'm doing. Yeah. I want this job forever.
I am not going to hurt you. Yeah. I'm just here to make this man's a living hell. Right. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Not afraid of death at all.
Let me tell you a story, and then you'll probably let me keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
This man.
Like, definition of a ride or die. Like, seriously. So, yeah, that's her little story. And, of course, she has other, like, adventures you can play, you know, your players can play with her as or whatever.
Yeah. So, she could also, I feel like, be similar to how we talked about the kids at the beginning. Like, she could potentially be just an Alice. Like, you could probably convince her to help you out with a lot of different stuff. Oh, especially if you agree with what she's trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
So she could maybe tag along and go on ventures with you.
It's funny because, like, in the book it says that she's very quiet and it would take a lot for your characters to, like, kind of, like, get something out of her or whatever. But it's like, she is a woman on a mission.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we love a lady on a mission.
With the right motivation.
Yes.
Amazing. All right, ladies. So we've talked about some wonderful things today. So on a scale of 1 to 10 terrifying apparitions, how would you rank these creatures as part of the undead landscape in the D&D 5th edition? First, starting with, of course, the classic, the ghost.
Like, 4?
Yeah.
I was going to say 5, but
like, it's got some gnarly, the incorporeal shit is rough.
Yeah.
And they're scarier than, like, a skeleton or a zombie.
Yeah.
Yep, I agree. I'd say 4. 4 or 5. It's like, it's middle of the road. Yeah. It's giving mid, you know?
Yeah.
I'm really trying to get hip with the kids these days. I don't know if you can tell. All right, what about the cloud giant ghost? We love giants here. I'm just going to give it for love of giants.
For love of giants, it bumps it. Yeah.
I'm gonna give it an 8.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
9.
Good. I love it.
Yeah. Like, I feel like it doesn't rank a 10 plus because I don't hate it, for one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, like, epically terrifying, but it's got some pretty cool abilities, and I still wouldn't want to come across it and, like, have to actually fight it. I would want it to be on my side. So,
yeah.
8. Yeah.
Yep.
Wow, we're gonna agree a lot.
I sound like
we're starting off hot.
Yeah, Casey's like, fuck this. All right, Shemshime. I would think because of its death mechanic, this one is like a 9 for me.
Yeah.
Just in the fact that, like, how hard it's going to be to kill, how hard it's going to be to figure that out if your team did not put the effort into doing that. Mm-hmm. It's just the risk reward of this one is very high.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and the fuckery with turning your players against each other, like, who knows how long it takes to get rid of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Cool.
Wow.
All right. Celeste, Marissa, and Marie. Or Mary? Mary.
Mary.
Okay.
Mary.
The trip ladies.
I mean, 1 to 10 terrifying apparitions.
Yeah.
I don't find them terrifying.
No, I'm going to say 3. No. 3 or 4.
Yeah, you gotta be smart to deal with them. So.
And Lord knows I'm not, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, about 4.
I'm saying 2.
Yeah.
I'm appreciating them, but.
Great story, but don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right, Rose and Thorn, not terrifying at all. Maybe because of the experience that I've had with them, they're not terrifying at all. So, like, on the terrifying scale, like,
1.
1. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they're not really a threat.
Mieka's like, fuck you guys. I spent weeks in a haunted castle with them.
I'm going to say 7 because I had to deal with them in their creepy ass house, and it was a lot for me. So I would say 7.
Yeah, okay. This is true.
Cute kids, but they
adorable, but you're frightening.
Their life terrified me.
Fair enough. So. Fair enough. All right, Aegeron's ghost.
He was one that seemingly, like, would not just, you know, attack and terrify to start. Like, his story was a little more like, I got fucked over. Yeah. So if you can
and
help
I want
me,
to tell you about it.
Yeah. Like, the revenge story is like, hey, help me with this, and, like, I will absolutely owe you the best favor.
Yeah. So terrifying, like, 2.
Yeah.
Three.
Yeah, just 2.
Like,
yeah.
Potential to be more devastating because it is a ghost, like, cloud giant stat block.
Yeah.
So, ally, phenomenal.
Yeah.
If he turns on you, not great.
Not right. As much. Fair
yeah.
Enough.
But yeah.
Agreed.
4.
Cool. All right. Lidara, our lady in waiting.
10.
Yeah. 10 for badass.
A woman.
Yeah.
A woman.
woman on a mission.
This is the part of the story we wanted.
Yes.
Thank you.
But in reality, probably not.
I mean, to be fair, like, I would find her frightening, because if she's a woman on a mission, like, let's put this in perspective here. She's a woman on a mission. She knows what she wants. She wants to stay alive so she can continue to do this mission. She's going to be frightening as fuck if you try to tell her she's not going to be able to do what she needs to do.
Oh, yeah.
So that's where the terrifying aspect comes. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, yeah.
Yeah, like, don't, she... like, you fuck around and find out with her if you're going to try.
If I've decided that I'm going to deep clean my entire kitchen and you walk in the house and ask me what I'm doing, I'm going to tell you to fuck off. You know what I mean? Like, that's the energy that I feel.
Yeah. She was responsible for the cataclysm, so it's like...
Yeah, like, she can throw down.
Yeah, like, she's using her words.
Yeah. Her words. Yeah, which is sometimes more terrifying. So, six?
All right, now it's time to close the casket on this part of our conversation on Undead in D&D 5th Edition. If you'd like to discuss what you've heard here today, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and at r/itsamimic. For more episodes on monsters and other D&D topics, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Bring Out Your Undead. If you'd like to support us, we have a donate button on our website, www.itsamimic.com, as well as a store and a Patreon. You can check out the show notes for details. Thanks again for listening to It's a Mimic, where you never know what you're going to get.
Just so you know, for legal reasons, but you can say whatever you want at this point.
All right. Do we need to do a check?
Casey, do your podcast voice.
Welcome to another episode of Bring Out Your Undead.
Okay, stop talking, Mieka.
There are so many kinds of ghost stories, from tragic romances to evil haunted houses.
All right. You guys look like you're doing all right. All right. Fantastic.
Excellent.
You're about even, which means nothing to me because I don't edit.
Yeah. Man, I am flushed from that fireball. It's gonna be great.
It's the fireball.
God damn.
It's coursing through your veins.
And this is a small room.
It's a very small room. Like, you're all wondering why I've gathered you here today.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. I just feel like sometimes it's easier to address it. Your alcoholism, Casey, is getting a little bit...
I'm working on it.
As we're chugging Malibu and...
This is ridiculous.
Oh, Lord.
Okay. We good?
I think we're good.
Yep.
It's, like, the definition of a ghost story is...
Are you saying Webster's definition?
Webster's definition of a ghost story. I have it down. Mega Omega. I told you the fireball was a bad idea.
The fireball is a problem.
Support the mission.
We're fine. Back on track.
I am data driven, so here are the facts.
Tell me more. Give me your facts.
Let's go.
Show me your Excel spreadsheet. Oh. Ma'am.
Okay.
You good?
Ascended structure.
I've never seen so much head nodding in my life.
I'm like, I yes. am reading yes. this with the wrong inflection.
Words.
But it's fine. I'm not redoing it, Adam.